Before I start the podcast, I need to send out a thank you message to all my wonderful patrons. These are people that have signed up to donate each month money to help support the podcast. I appreciate them so much. They are Sean Poole, David and Jennifer Evans, Jeff Ulmer, Sylvian Groth, Liz Brunson, Yetta, Steve Van Sack, Robert Brown, Rob Barnett, Bella Corey, John Munson, Betsy Hodges, Levi Peter, Elizabeth Brunson, Stephen Malio, Steve Rogers, Dale Hosack, Terry Smith, Chris Bloom, and Mary Thomas. Thank you guys for being part of this community. If you want to join Patreon, it's really easy. Go to patreon.com, search for Seth Lessing Bruce, and from there you can log on and sign up for as little as $1 a month. Doing that, you get a handwritten thank you note from me. At certain tiers, you get unedited episodes. You get preview episodes. And you also can join my advisory council. These are the group of supporters who get first notice of when I'm trying something new, and they are able to give us feedback on what they think of these new projects. So thank you guys for being part of this. Now then, let's get on with the conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of Seth Lessing Bruce, your podcast all about Bruce Springsteen, his music, and mostly his fans. I am your host, Jesse Jackson. We are getting off the Bruce train, though I'm sure he will come up, as he often does. And we're going to spend time after time visiting with my two new friends, Colin and Joe. I'm going to let them introduce themselves in a minute, but I want to warn you guys, we've already talked over 20 minutes before I even hit record. So this may be a long one. Guys, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, so I guess we'll do an alphabetical order. Colin, please say hi. Tell us a little about yourself.
Yeah, hi. My name is Colin. I live on the east coast of Canada in a province called New Brunswick. It's about an hour east of Maine. And this is where I grew up. I've been here my whole life. So I know we're going to talk a lot about Cindy today and a little bit of Bruce. Neither of them have played in my area. Whenever I have to go to a concert for a major artist, I'm traveling.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Go ahead. And Joe, how about yourself?
So I'm in Florida. I'm originally from New York, and that's when I fell in love with Cindy, but I've been following her whole career. And yeah, I will travel too. I haven't seen her as many times as Colin, but we're definitely both super fans in different ways.
Yeah. And so both Joe and Colin and the third member of their terrific trio wasn't able to make us, but we are here to talk about the singer, songwriter, just all around pop culture icon, Cyndi Lauper. And you guys are trying to get her in the Hall of Fame. And so we're going to get to that in a little bit. I personally think this is a great idea. And so when I first heard about it, I'm like, okay, I got to talk to these guys. This is going to be a blast. So you'll know where we're coming from. Joe, I always like to start at the beginning, though, where you said you grew up in New York. What kind of music was your family listening to?
The musical person in my family was my mom, and she was listening to Barbara Streisand, Olivia Newton-John, and Laura Branigan. So she was like a kind of a young, cooler mom. And then I started listening to the radio when she started playing Culture Club. And I thought, wow, my mom's pretty cool that she's playing Culture Club. I like this group. But my first band that I liked was Eurythmics. And I was just learning to like different things about different artists. And then I went back a little further and I was like, I really like this. And I really like Pat Benatar, but it was Cindy who really sucked me in. My parents probably were a little bit more conservative. My dad would listen to Linda Ronstadt and things like that, but I wasn't really exposed to a lot of rock.
Okay.
It was more of a pop influence.
Why do you think you were drawn to female vocalists?
That's such a tough question.
Because you just, I noticed that Colin's laughing, by the way, you guys, because you named almost all female lead vocalists. Yeah.
I don't know if that was something my mom just set the standard for, or being a young gay teen. I think as a young gay teen, like, you were always looking for our diva. We don't know that, but yes, also we find one. And so for a lot of people, it's Madonna or Brit. For me, it was Cindy, and we can talk about why. But yeah, my parents were Cindy fans, and they liked her, and they liked that I liked her, and they took me to my first concert when I was 14.
Okay. So, Colin, same question for you. Growing up in Canada, what kind of music were your family listening to?
My parents divorced, a very different music households between the two. My mother only listened to classical, and I hated it. Leona Boyd, if that's a name that that's the only name that really rings out. I remember a lot of Leona Boyd records. My father liked more current music. I remember ABBA in his collection. But still, I lived with my mother primarily long. I didn't discover music until 84. I was in the fourth grade, and it just exploded. That was a big year for a lot of people. Call 84 a big year in music anyway. But for me, that's when I discovered radio. And then Cindy's part of that, of course. We'll get into that, I'm sure. But in my youth, my first love, and still to this day, I love them, is Duran, not a female vocalist.
Yeah.
and that's a hardcore passion for me. Cindy's right up there too. Well, again, I know we'll get into it. I love them both equally, and those are my number one and two.
So I had someone about a year and a half, maybe, might have been longer than that, join me, and we did a Duran versus Bruce kind of fun debate. It was great. And I did not know Duran was a song that kept him from getting a number one. Dancing in the Dark only got as high as two, and a Duran song was number one, which was, I thought, pretty funny.
Yes.
Yeah. So I said before we recorded, there's two kinds of artists, two kinds of fans that are on my show. Usually the ones that embrace their parents' music and move forward, or rejected, then later came to embrace it. Are you now a fan of classical music, Colin?
Oh, no, not at all.
Still,
sorry.
Still not. Okay.
I don't fit your bill. I don't fit
okay,
the bill.
There, that's nothing wrong with that. That's awesome. Very nice. I ask this often, and so I'm going to stick with you, Colin. Can you remember, and not necessarily when you first discovered Cindy, but the first time she became significant musically in your life? And if you can, articulate why.
Yeah, I can. And I know Joe's heard me talk about this before. Here we are.
I have it, and my audience has it. But yes.
True enough. I'm sorry. For me, my story is different. I almost wish you would start with Joe on this one, because my story is different.
I can start with Joe if you want.
Let's do Joe first, because my story is different than a typical Cindy fan. Please. Thank you.
I think it just all boils down to, it's interesting to hear that Colin fell into radio in fourth grade. I really wasn't listening to the radio until about 11th grade. I came into music very late. Maybe not, because 84, okay, maybe 9th, 10th grade. But I think that it was the Time After Time video that did it for me with MTV. Everyone was watching MTV. And I was like, I thought everybody was pretty cool. But when I saw her get on that train and cry, and I thought, wow, there's something really special about this person. So she really spoke to me as somebody who's an outsider. And so from that moment, I forgave her for Girls Just Want to Have Fun. And I started to appreciate that she can do lots of different things and lots of different styles. And she continues to do this to this day. She goes into genres that I wouldn't expect. And no matter what she's doing, she does it well. And so I've been following her ever since, because there was something about that video that just sucked me in. And I was sad for her because it was sad for me. And so we connected on a sad level. It was kind of melodramatic.
So I'm going to get to you, Colin, but I grew up in a family that, to quote the Blues Brothers, listened to both kinds of music, country and Western. Deep Southern household. I have said this probably 300 times on this podcast, but it's a true story. I was 9, 10 in the late 60s. And my cousins could not believe I could not name all four Beatles. They just were amazed. Like, how can you? It's 69. You're 10 years old. How can you not name all four Beatles? Because we weren't listening to rock and roll in my house. We were listening to country music. The AM clock radio was my gateway to music, right? I had that little AM clock radio and listened to that. You can imagine how good that sound was. But I controlled the station. I got to listen to the rock and roll station and listening to that and growing up with that when 75, 76. And Kasem's Top 40 was mandatory listening after we got home from church, right? You turned that on and listened. Colin, you talked about discovering music in 84. By the way, makes me feel very old, right? Because I graduated high school in 77. But tell me your origin story and how it's different than some.
In the 80s, and 84, I know, was a big Bruce year too, so I didn't want to take away from that. I know
that's
that.
Yes, I understand. Absolutely.
In the 80s, I was a casual Cindy fan.
Right.
Everyone knew her. I had the albums. Like, I bought a lot of tapes back in my youth. I did not become diehard until 90s. She was past her, like, mega success, let's say, and she started putting out more artistic stuff, and we may get into this later, we may not, with albums and whatnot, but her 90s output drew me in, and then I finally saw her in concert for the first time in 97, and it was it.
how did you discover albums in the 90s? What led you to doing that?
I always bought her I bought her tapes when they came out. I was a casual fan. Like,
okay,
again, I'm a casual fan. I have my two big ones, but I'm a casual fan of a lot of artists. So I always bought her tapes. And then there's one album from 93, Hat Full of Stars. And then her 97 album, Sisters of Avalon. Again, we'll get these albums just blew me away. And it just brought my fandom right up. And then seeing her in concert, I know I'm repeating myself, but it just changed everything. And
so I, obviously, I found Bruce in 1980. My wife, Linda, and I started dating in 80, and she had a friend who was going to school in the East Coast, and she came back talking about this guy named Bruce Springsteen. And then The River came out, and I liked it. And then, like everyone else in America in 84, you're buying Born in the USA, and then just drifted off. I would have said, oh, I'm a Bruce fan. Yeah, I like Bruce. I bought Tunnel of Love, and I bought the box set of his live stuff, but had not bought anything for a while. And The Rising came out, and I won't get into that long story of how I got intrigued, but my first concert seeing him was 2002. And he was doing a lot of songs from The Rising and then songs not from Born in the USA, right? What the casual fan would call deeper cuts. And I felt like I was in a movie halfway through it. I could tell it was a really good movie, but I didn't quite know what was going on. And I wanted to know what was going on. And I often joke, I think there's two kinds of people. The people that go to their first Bruce show and go, that was long. And then the other ones who say, wow, how have I been missing this? And how do I get it again? I thought I'd share that story, Colin, because it's very similar, right? 2002, no one would say that Bruce's heyday, right? But he has had a very strong second or third act, right? But it was enough. It was doing for that. I'll give first, Colin. The amount of times you've seen an artist perform live is not a fair barometer of how big of a fan you are. I have had people that have adored artists, have never seen him live. And then I've had people that, because of their age and they grew up on the East Coast, they were able to see Bruce almost 100 times just because he was playing in local colleges and stuff. So for the record, how many times have you seen her? And do you count?
Yes, I do count. And I know my number.
Okay.
It's 181.
Okay, very nice. And you didn't start to win?
97.
So, yeah, you get to. Very nice.
Yes. She tours. I mean, right now is not a great example, but she tours a lot. She's a frequent tour, and it just works out. I got to a point in my life where I was able to do it. So I've done complete tours. I've done every night of a tour.
I am so jealous because my wife was asking me how you, when you're married and you talk, and oh, what would you do if you won the lottery? And I said, I would go to every show on a Bruce tour. I would follow the whole tour.
Yep.
She goes, that's selfish. What about me? I'm like, you asked me what I wanted. You could come along. We've won the lottery and you could sightsee or do some whatever you want, but you asked what I wanted. So how about you, Joe?
Size does matter, but I have to say I cannot keep up with Colin. I'm at 40. I think I have to double check. I think I'm at 40. And some people go, oh my God, that's a lot of concerts. And I'm thinking, yeah, you should meet my friends. I just don't understand how they can do it. It's very expensive. But I put my passion into collecting.
Okay.
So the more people I meet, the more I realize that there are so many different fans. There's a couple super fans who are all about the live show. And then there are some who are just about the vinyl. And then there are some who are just about pictures. And I'm just about collecting all of the memorabilia. So I get more excited about maybe a dress than a concert.
Okay. Interesting. I like that. I'm not a big memorabilia collector, though my wife would probably argue with you that all the comic book crap I have around this house is the amount of fan. I've had people that are huge, hundreds of bootlegs, right? There are people just adore bootlegs and they've got to have that, or signed posters and memorabilia, right? And then there's others that they will remain nameless. I am staying gender neutral to protect their identity, but they may have told their employer that they needed a leave of absence to take care of a family member, which was partly true, but really was to go to 12 shows, right? Of Springsteen shows. And I thought that was awesome. And I got to see Bruce three times last year. He was all in Texas, so I got to see him on a Friday in Dallas, a Tuesday in Houston, a Thursday in Austin, and then I had Tulsa tickets, but I picked up COVID at one of those concerts. It's the first time I had COVID, and so I had to miss. So I had to give the three tickets away. My wife and son and I were all planning to go to Tulsa and make a long weekend out of it. But yeah, I get you. So I'm trying not to ask the most obvious question, but I'm going to just be the cliche guy. Top two or three things that you're most proud of, Joe, on your collection.
Ugh, that's always tough because I can't say two or three. It's probably like the top five. One would be I have her blue dress from the Bring It to the Brink album. That's my second favorite album of hers.
Okay.
If you're not a Cindy fan, you wouldn't know what I'm talking about.
That's okay.
The Time After Time handwritten lyrics that she specifically wrote for the museum. I also recently got a platinum record dedicated to the museum. Because it's grown so much, it's gotten a lot of credibility within the fan community and from Cindy herself. So she has actually included it on her website. So that's a big compliment. Her bra. Oh, and probably her first microphone. So I have her microphone from 1977, and everyone has heard how Cindy has lost her voice at one point. And so I have the microphone that she actually blew out her vocal cords on and was taken to the emergency room and basically was told she'd never sing again. And then we know the story there. But yeah, I have some pretty amazing things. In fact, I also have the first video cassette recording of her on stage doing a full concert.
Wow.
Pretty extensive.
All right. So I'm going to come back to that in a minute. Colin, how about you? Top concerts.
My top concerts for a 10-year period in December, she did a holiday Christmas show every year. Mm-hmm. And it was called Cyndi Lauper and Friends. And every year it would be her and a bunch A, B, C list celebrities. It wasn't always A. Anyway, it was those events. It was unique performances. She would do songs she's never done before and never has done again. It was a 3-hour show every year. It was in New York City most years, 1 year in LA. I don't have a top concert, but that would be my top series. She did it for 10 years straight.
Oh, that sounds amazing to me.
Yeah.
I did have that. I remember once Billy Joel was here in Dallas, and it was around Christmas, and he did three songs where he pulled out like a songbook and he did like a Christmas carol. He did Christmas holiday songs. And one of the persons I was with was like, okay, I didn't pay a lot of money to hear him do Hark the Herald Angels Sing. But I thought it was awesome. I was like, this is so fun. Memorable guest stars? I know you mentioned they were A, B, and C. Was there someone that really stood out?
If we want to talk big names, like she had Pink there one year.
That's pretty big, yeah.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head now.
Sarah
she
McLachlan.
Did a duet with Sarah McLachlan. She did a Beautiful People with Marilyn Manson.
Oh, wow.
And she did Rise Above with Henry Rollins. These were very unique. We're never going to get that again. That was a one night only thing. But yeah, and tons of others like Adam Lambert, who I like. Belinda Carlisle, Roberta Flack. Honestly, if I knew this question was coming, I could have. Every year there's 10 names. When I say A, B, and C, I'm not trying to knock the lower names.
No, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. You would have heard it. Like, it was amazing every year. Yeah.
That does sound a lot of fun. I've told this story before the pandemic. Brian Wilson, who was my first musical obsession, in 77, I bought Endless Summer on 8-track, and I never had seen, never heard music like that, right? Like, I was a Kiss guy, and when Queen, and all the 70s rock and roll, Casey and the Sunshine Band, Eagles, Fleetwood Mac, and I heard the Beach Boys, and I'd never heard harmony like that. And I just became obsessed with the Beach Boys and Brian Wilson. Before the pandemic, Brian was playing in New Jersey and Bruce joined him on an encore doing two songs. Wow. And I said, forget my son getting married. Forget seeing grandchildren. If I had been in that room sawing Bruce and Brian together, you could take me away, Lord. This is it. I'm done. What else could you want in life? So I get that. That's pretty special. That's great. Joe, how did the museum start? And Colin, I'm sure you're bored with this story.
I've been to the museum many times and I'm from another country. So it's awesome.
Yeah. Go ahead. Colin is very loyal. The long story short is I've been collecting since I was 14. So the more I think about it, it was probably more like ninth grade, but needless to say, a lot of this stuff had to be replaced because when you're a teen, you're not taking care of things.
Sure.
And you're throwing it on your record player and things get tattered. And once the internet came out, I did reach out to him and I did thank him. He had a website called Page After Page. And all of the Cindy fans loved this website because it documented basically her discography and all the picture sleeves. And so any collector would go to this as a reference site. And his name was John Mark Pirapez. I don't know if I'm saying that right.
I think you are.
I think he's French.
Belgium. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So we all loved this site. And I fell in love with the collecting aspect. He didn't have all these things, but he collected all the images and organized it. And I decided, you know what? I want to get those things. So I went out of my way to start buying all of these things from all over the world. And of course, there's still things I do not have. But I have to say, this has been checked out many times. I definitely have the biggest collection in the world. And so it just got bigger and bigger. And my spouse at the time said, you really should let other fans know how big this is getting. And so we realized that it just couldn't fit in a room anymore. And so it finally started taking over the house. And being single at 54, I said, screw this. I'm literally going to take over the whole house. So this is my living room. But my entire home is dedicated to the memorabilia outside of my master bedroom. So when people come for tours, it's free, a free tour. It takes at least 90 minutes to show them everything because there's a lot of stuff. But it wasn't until social media got big that I really branded it. And David, my ex, joked with me about getting me a business card that said curator. And I thought, I don't know, that's so funny. I think we can actually do that. And so it just became a thing where thousands of people follow. And I have some really loyal fans who've come several times. And it's fun just to get together with other super fans and talk about Cindy and to listen to things that nobody's heard or show them things that nobody's seen. So I do have some pretty incredible things. And it's just, it's gained a lot of notoriety now that Cindy signed off on it. It's the unofficial museum because she has yet to come, but maybe one day she'll show up.
How was that connection made? How did she find out about it and that connection?
It's been a process. At first, I would send maybe a picture of some of the collection and she would sign it. And then when I finally had dinner with her through a contest, it's not like we have dinner, but yeah, through a contest, I showed her a video of some of it. And she was, I think she was freaked out and thought, wow, this is like a really intense collector. But I think once she understood why I was doing this, she gained some respect for it. And when the team contacted me and asked permission to put it on her website as the unofficial museum, I thought, why are you even asking me this question? Of course.
Yeah, duh. Yeah. This is the easiest answer ever.
Correct. You didn't need to make this call because yeah, it's the biggest compliment ever. Cindy's checked out the site. She's given shout outs. She's signed off on things. She's sent things. We have a good professional working relationship. She knows what I'm doing and why. And for example, this week, of course, nothing comes for free in this world, but right, I purchased an outfit. So for example, like right behind me there, there's an outfit there from that she wore to the Kentucky Derby.
Okay.
So I just have some really amazing things that most people could not care less about. But there's a lot of people who come out of their way from different states and different countries to be like, wow, I just want to see what you've done. It's pretty extensive.
How did you two meet?
Through a mutual Cindy fan.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. I'd known just from the 90s and when email, like before Facebook and everything, I'm sure Bruce had the same thing. There was a lot of like email groups.
Yeah.
Whether you want to call them Yahoo groups or what. So I knew Joe's name from posting on there. And then, but yes, through a mutual friend at one of these holiday shows. It was actually 14 years ago now. It was in 2012. We met. And we just became good friends. And I've now visited him in Florida many times.
And sadly, that friend has passed away. But thankfully, Sue introduced us. And we have good memories of Sue.
Very good memories of Sue, yes. And she's very well known in the friend who introduced us is very well known in the Cindy community. Her name, Sue, she went by P-Town Sue. And yeah, she did pass away sadly and good memories. But when I was going to throw in a comment, the first time I visited Joe in Florida, he was calling it the Cyndi Lauper Shrine, his collection. And it hadn't been the museum yet. So I'm happy to say
you got to see the shrine.
I saw it build from what the beginnings to the amazing full house spectacular. It's great. It's amazing.
That's awesome. One of the things that strikes me with your shows is, once again, Belgium. There is a guy that has written, he has a mybosstime.com, and it is free to create an account, and he has every Bruce show from as far back as he can go. And you sign your account and you go, I was at that show. I was at that show. I was at that show. So I've been to 19 shows. Then behind the scenes, he does the math and says, okay, these are the songs you've heard the most. Here are the songs you've seen the least. Here are the rare songs. Bruce has only done this song 4 times ever live, and you've seen it once. Yeah, and it's like he's covered, and by the way, this is timely, Van Halen's Jump came out about this time many years ago, but Bruce has done Jump twice live. I was at the show. He was playing for the NCAA basketball tournament. It was a free show. His guitar tech came out in a ref uniform, and him and Niels Lofgren did a jump ball, and the E Street Band went into Jump. And so he's only played that song twice. I got to hear it once. My friend, who's a huge Dylan fan, I wish someone would do this for Dylan. And I'm thinking the same. Wouldn't that be great for Cindy to see, oh, what is the song you've heard the most? Or what is the thing? Believe it or not, it isn't Born to Run for me. I have not heard Born to Run every song. In one show I went to, he did not play Born to Run. But I've seen The Rising. That song, every show I've ever attended, he's done The Rising. Which I think has more to do with what time period I'm watching them than any significance.
I love this idea. I think Colin should take this on.
Oh my God.
I'm going to volunteer him for this because I think he's probably met the most fans because he's been to so many concerts.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of maybe even connecting fans through which concerts they've gone to.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Belgium fan that we talked about earlier, his page that was the first huge Cindy page, it was called Page After Page. He had an interactive, and this was the 90s, this is the mid-90s. Yeah. But he had an interactive where you could check off that you were there and you could write a review of the show. And it was fantastic. I loved that. No one's ever recreated that in the Cindy world on a website. And I know in this day and age, it's all social media. People don't have interest in websites like they used to. But that really brought fans together before.
Yeah. And, you know, and one of the things that I find often when I have guests, especially Bruce fans, is that community. You meet people at a show that you may only see at a show, right? But you immediately love each other and see each other. It's, oh, I can't believe. And I remember I was going to Nashville to see Bruce and had connected. And there's a wonderful woman, Donna, who created a called Bruce Funds. And what she does is she basically, if I have an extra ticket, they give it to Donna and Donna finds someone who's never seen Bruce before and gives it to them. Bruce had a song, We Take Care of Our Own, which is a satire that we don't take care of our own, but we do that. And so they were all meeting at a restaurant. And so my wife's, you're going to go meet people you don't know? And like, first off, I said, not to be sexist, but they're all women and I'm a guy coming. So if anything, they should be nervous about me. And secondly, it's in a public restaurant. And three, we're Bruce fans. We're going to be fine. Wow. And yeah, I mean, what could go wrong? And there are that through this podcast and through social media, there are people that I've never met in person, but just I think of as a friend. I think of them as a Springsteen brother or sister or a music fan. And a lot of East Coast people are like, I can't believe I'm friends with a Cowboy fan, right? Because they're all because of sports things. But yeah, I think this community is amazing. I don't know. I'm going to take you guys take lead. No, before we get to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I do want to spend a few minutes talking about the new documentary that just came out. You'd always heard, and in fact, I was a little bitter. Like when Bruce wrote his autobiography, there is not anything talking about recording We Are the World. He doesn't talk about it. He doesn't mention it. It isn't anything at all. And I love his autobiography. It is so filled with the stories of him fighting his depression and all the things about how his first marriage failed and it was all his fault and his problems with his parents. But I wanted to know, what was it like that night, right? So when this documentary comes out, I'm optimistic. I hope this is going to be good. And from my perspective, I thought it was amazing. I thought Lionel Richie was just the right amount of funny and sincere, telling the wild stories. I thought Bruce was really good. I thought Cindy was really good. Obviously, you guys are both shaking your head. You've seen it. Colin, any thoughts on the film and specifically any Bruce or Cindy thoughts? Yeah. We'll throw a little something out for my Bruce listeners.
No, that's great. No, I have seen it, the Greatest Night in Pop, and I thought it was great as well. You likely know this, but I don't know the exact year, but maybe in early 2000s, a DVD came out, let's call it a documentary of We Are the World. Yeah. But it felt so low budget. It just wasn't great. And this one is a huge improvement.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, big time. And let's talk both. Bruce and Cindy both got a lot of time on screen in that documentary. It was great. I didn't realize Bruce wasn't at the American Music Awards that night. I learned stuff just watching it.
Yeah.
So he was one of the ones they had their hopes. They really wanted him. And he showed up. He showed up for them. And I'm Cindy fans, we were not aware of that part where her boyfriend at the time told her not to do it. So.
Yeah. And we had always heard, I had heard the story about her jewelry rattling, right?
Yes.
And to actually see that was hilarious.
In the original, in the DVD that came out in, I don't know, 20 years ago, yeah. Like there's a lot more footage of that jewelry rattling. So,
yeah,
but no, they piece it together so perfectly in this new Netflix one that it really, but you said it, I can't remember if you said it during this recording or before we were talking, but she yeah. nailed her part in that song. And it's, even though I was a casual fan in the 80s, I know I said that earlier, that part of the song blew me away. It still does. Every time I hear it.
Yeah. Oh, she's amazing in it. And to see Dylan going, I'm just really uncomfortable. And Ray Charles has to do the fake Dylan so that he can, okay, yeah, now I know what to do. So how about you, Joe?
I just have to go on record for your fans saying, I've never been a Bruce fan. I always thought he looked good, but yeah. I didn't really like his music or his voice.
Sure.
I can appreciate that people liked him for what he was. He just wasn't what I was looking for. But I have to say, I fell in love with Bruce Springsteen in that documentary. I walked away from that documentary really liking him and Lionel Richie. And I thought without those two, this thing would have never worked the way that it did. And as somebody who doesn't love him or his voice, he sounded so good on that track. He did such a great job. I have to say, I'm a Bruce fan after watching it. So I'm going to actually look a little bit more into Bruce. But I have to say, he was the consummate professional when everybody else was flying by the seat of their pants. And so I just really enjoyed watching who pulled it together, who was falling apart, and just to see the personalities and to see some of the stuff that we had heard. I did read at one point that Cindy and Bruce don't have the best relationship, but I don't know that to be true. Hmm. They seem to get along really well that night. I don't know how much they've worked together since, but I don't know that they're on the best terms. But needless to say, I thought that I loved the documentary. And I don't know that there was much new for Cindy fans, but I think it taught us a lot about the other people that were there. So that was good yeah. to see it from other perspectives.
Yeah. Go ahead, Colin.
I was just going to say, It was neat for this podcast to bring this up. At the very end, when Lionel was wrapping up the documentary, when he was referencing he was in the room that it was filmed in, he said, like you said, Bruce Springsteen sang his part right here. Cindy sang her part right here. He referenced those two right there at the end of the documentary. Anyway, yeah, I just thought that was neat and timely here.
I thought it was nice, too. Now, you've made a serious misstep, Joe, because often what happens is I get someone on the podcast that'll say, I haven't done a big exploration on Bruce's music. And they're often talking about someone that I haven't done a big exploration on. So if you want, I've done this in the past. I had a guy who adored the Bee Gees. And so he sent me 10, because I said, the Bee Gees and Bruce Springsteen have something in common. When someone says, I don't like the Bee Gees, have you listened to anything besides Saturday Night Fever? I don't like Bruce Springsteen. Have you listened to anything besides Born in the USA? So he sent me 10 Bee Gees songs, and I sent him 10 Springsteen songs. We spent some time with it, and then he came back on the podcast, and we talked about the thing. So I will throw that open to both you and Colin if you guys want to do that. Maybe together, you guys, here's 10 songs you probably have never heard Cindy do, and explore that, and then I can send you 10 besides Thunder Road or Born to Run that you guys could go some different thoughts. Just throwing it out there.
I am definitely up for that. I love experiments, so yeah. I'm down for this experiment.
Yeah, in fact, for a while there, I had other podcasters who didn't know Bruce, and I send them 10 songs, and then they came on and joined it, and I called them Bruce Newbie episodes, and I didn't, like, I don't care if you hate it, I don't care if you love it. I just need you to talk about it. It's a bad podcast. Go, didn't like it. Okay, I'm going to need a little more than that. That's fine. All right. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Cindy is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And how did this campaign start? And I don't know. I'm sure you guys have done this enough that you probably have this down pat. So I will let you guys... No, you're shaking your head. No, I don't know who's best to start with it. And then the other one jump in.
All you, Joe.
I'm going to start just because it wasn't even my idea. Again, my spouse is the one who came up with the idea of doing a campaign for Cindy, because every year I would bitch and moan that Cindy wasn't nominated. And I thought, how is she not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? She's been eligible since 2009. And if I'm not mistaken, I think Madonna got in like 2008. She got in really early. I may have that wrong. But I thought, what's going wrong here that this person has not been put in? And then you hear these stories about poor Pat Benatar, who took the longest time, people who are still not in that should be in, including Cher, even though that's a long story. I don't want to get into that. But I do think that there are people who should be in there that are not. And I loved that Dolly was added and Willie, because even though they're not necessarily classic rock, like somebody like Bruce is clearly rock.
Yeah.
I do think that some of these other people deserve because they're influential. And I think Cindy's been very influential. He said, "Then stop bitching about it and do something." And I said, "Oh God, here I go with a project." And I called Colin and I called my friend Bay, and we started putting some effort into like, how does a campaign like this work? And so I have to give a shout out to Mike with Induct Janet. He was a big help. I called him and I said, "Look, I know that I've heard that you helped Janet get in. How did that happen?" And so he gave us a backstory of what he was able to do to help and what we can't do. The artist cannot help in any way. So you can't call Cindy or her management and say, "Hey, can you help us with this?" They literally cannot comment on any of it. It's very frustrating. So we don't know what we're doing. We're just making up as we go, or we learn vicariously through others. There's a website called Future Rock Legends. Shout out to them, because they have, as far as I can find, the best information on who's been in, who should be getting in, when they're eligible, how many times they've been overlooked. We worked really hard for about a year and a half on just trying to get the name out there, the Induct Cyndi Lauper name, as well as just bringing attention to the fact that Cindy is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. How is that possible? And everyone we talked to said, "She's not." "Yes, she is." "No, she's not." So we worked hard, and we have to say that we can take, I think, a good amount of credit for the fact that she was nominated in 2023. I can't bore you with the details, but we covered a lot of territory, and with some traction, we got the campaign in front of some big names. She was nominated, but sadly, she did not get in. And there's lots of theories as to why that is. I have two. One is that, and the word is from some other people in the industry, that it was going to be common sense that Cindy was going to get in. And so they only have so many votes that they can give. And so they were giving their vote to maybe like Kate Bush or Sheryl Crow, thinking Cindy's a shoo-in. Unfortunately, that potentially, I think, was a problem, because we all assumed, and then look what happened. She didn't make it. I think that the other challenge is Cindy is known as a pop artist. And if we do our experiment, I'll have to make sure that 9 out of those 10 songs are not pop.
Okay.
She's done every genre, literally every genre.
Right.
And when people say she's not rock, I say, what isn't she? She's done it all. Country, blues, jazz.
Yeah.
Soul. It's nuts.
And so I want to hear your thoughts, Colin, but here's where I'm going to get on my rant, is neither is the hip hop artist we're having. And I say, good, let him join. Willie Nelson, not a rock star, but has a rock adder. This is a music hall of fame. As I said before, I grew up a child of the 70s. John Denver, the Carpenters, these people that were massive. And maybe they're not cool anymore, but they were significant and they contributed. Linda Ronstadt, very pop, but also rock and roll. Did the country music with Dolly and Emmylou Harris, and then did her songs of her father, Hispanic, and with big band. So why would you hold it against an artist that they are diverse in their musical stylings? End of rant. Colin, thoughts?
No, I mean, some of what I'm going to say is going to echo Joe, but her music crosses all the boundaries. And I like what you just said, and I agree. It should be the Music Hall of Fame, not the Rock Hall.
Yeah.
And obviously that's where it's going with all the recent inductees from all the different. And when she finally got on the ballot in 2023, we became very, because people would post their comments on, the actual voters would make comments. And again, echoing what Joe was saying, we saw people post right on their blogs or right on their podcasts and said, oh, Cindy doesn't need my vote. She getting in. So I'm going to put mine here. And it was great to hear that at the time when the voting was open. We're like, so much momentum. Anyway, that it didn't happen.
How did she do on the fan voting?
Number two.
Okay.
At the end. So we that was part of our efforts that I was involved in, that of encouraging fans, like rallying the troops, so to speak. And sure. And we did a good job.
My wife fell in love with Kate Bush's music years ago. And so for her sake, I was really happy for Kate Bush. And by the way, I am not someone who says, I don't shit on somebody else's fandom. I don't go, oh, that person has no business being in the Hall of Fame. A lot of people, Warren Zevon fans, right? Oh, this is horrible. No one else should be in there till Warren's in there. So I would love to see Cher be in. I was happy for Kate Bush. I was ready for Pat Benatar. That doesn't mean I'm not sad Cindy didn't make it, right? We wish you could do. Now, with baseball and with, I know, football, once you're on the ballot, you stay on it for multiple years. Is that not the case with this?
No, it's revisited. Yeah, go ahead.
Every year you start from scratch.
Wow.
What were you going to say about that?
I was going to echo what you said. Every year, they meet in January, I believe, annually, the voting committee or the nomination committee, sorry. And then they choose their list. Someone said, you guys said Pat earlier. I don't remember exactly how many times Pat was on there. 5, 6, 7 before she finally got in. We're not wishing that in our Cindy world. But we were also given a stat that once you've made it once, your odds of eventually getting in are good. I think we were given numbers, which I'm forgetting at the moment, but she's been on their radar, which is great. And we're not giving up the fight till she gets in there. I'm learning that. And I've always known this, but no one ever really bad talks Cindy. Everyone likes her on some level. Not everyone's a diehard fan, but when you mention Cindy to people, whether it be in this Rock Hall context or otherwise, like people, their face lights up. Cindy brings a lot of joy. So she's a pop culture icon. I think that was said earlier, but I agree.
So she is not on the 2024 ballot, right?
No, she was overlooked. And I thought she would be on again this year. There is word. And again, I don't know whose word and how reliable it is. But apparently Cindy's name came up in the meeting this year. They have approximately 30 people on the nomination committee who throw around names and then make a case. I don't know. I'm not sure what happened. There's some chatter that maybe somebody didn't want her on. So it is very political. Those 30 people make the ultimate decision. And then once those people are nominated, then there's approximately, I want to say it's 1,200 voters. Not a lot of people are making this decision. The fan vote is really insulting because we spend months trying to get people to vote for Cindy. And then it counts towards one vote of approximately 1,200 votes. So it's not even 1% of the vote. Colin, help me out here. How would we say this?
It's 0.1, maybe, potentially, 0.01. Yeah. It's such a small amount. And one other thing, this year, they've changed the rules. The actual 1,200 voters, until this year, they could pick their top 5. This year, they get to pick their top 7. For the first time ever. And we both feel, maybe, I don't want to sound like a jaded fan, but if it was 7 last year, maybe.
Yeah, and I don't know, do they limit the amount of people that can win every year?
Yes.
Okay.
They have an idea of what they want, and then they may make an exception and add one. So I'm trying to remember. I think if you start off with 14, mm-hmm. they try to get down to 7.
Okay.
Depending on the year, I find the Rock Hall to be very inconsistent. So some years it's 7, some years it's 8, some years it's 6. And if they feel like it, they might just throw in an extra person at the last minute. and then, of course, they also have these other nominations that are given per, and I'm not even sure what it's called. It's like something to do with creative something.
Yeah.
What early influence is one of them. Early influence.
Yeah, and the E Street Band got in is it's because they were, it's a band. It's a different kind of category, but it is a legitimate, like every member of the E Street Band up to a certain degree have, you are now member, including the two or three people that were with Bruce during the first two albums, right? During the early days. Like I said, I try not to judge, because I know the people that love a band, right? It is, I don't want to talk bad about Peter Frampton, right? I bought Frampton Came Alive. I remember, but like the sports station I was talking to was talking about, what's Peter Frampton done? And I'm like, hey, Peter Frampton, I'm sure is incredibly influential in doing things, but I am the politics of it. And we had a little bit of that. I was really unhappy with Bruce's. I think Bruce needs to spend some of the $500 million Sony paid him for his catalog to get better PR people. His manager, John Landau, said, I'm not going to vote to kick the Weiner off the Hall of Fame because we've been friends a long time. I don't care. You tell your friend, I'm sorry, but you've said some dumb things, and you've not fought to add people of different races, of different genders, of different situations in the Hall of Fame. And it should be more than just old white guys. 2002, I did that where I realized if I wasn't careful, all my guests would be old white guys from the East Coast, because Bruce fans. So I specifically looked for younger fans, female fans, non-binary fans, just different kind of people to make this a little more than just the joke. What do you call three white guys talking? A podcast. You gotta just try to do something. All right, so 2024, unless she is in some kind of other category, we now got to start working on 2025, right?
Correct.
Okay. Correct.
Yes, and I sound a little bitter because this just happened, but
yes, you know, it just bitter, yeah.
It's fresh. You know,
we've all put so much time and effort into it, and it's just disheartening at times because it doesn't feel like we have much control. There are people who hold a lot of power, and the fans don't hold any. So we can just keep trying to make noise out there. We can talk more about our campaign and how to help later, but I will say that there are a lot of people out there who want to help in their own way. It's just hard to get people motivated. We can go through all the reasons that Cindy deserves it. I won't bore your fans. We've made some good videos that even showcase that, in which we can give you the address for that. But she's earned it. I do think it's just a matter of time. And I'm definitely not one of those bitter people who also complain that other people get in. I do think my biggest complaint is that some of the newer artists are getting in before the older artists. And I understand it's not based on seniority or age.
Yeah.
But I feel like some of the people, I'm thinking one person in particular, I won't tell you who it is, would not be inducted last year if Cindy hadn't led the way for her. I get it. Cher should have been in before Cindy.
Yeah. You know? So, yeah. And one of the things that, especially in the early years of this Hall of Fame, it was just amazing the amount, because they had been this years of people being in there. And as the each generation changes, you get new and different people. And I think you have the same problem with Sports Hall of Fame. As a Dallas Cowboy fan, Drew Pearson was like in the all 70s football team. He was named all 70s, was in the Hall of Fame. And if he finally got in after a lot of years, I do another podcast where we're doing John Hiatt, who is a singer-songwriter, wrote Are You Ready for This Thing Called Love for Bonnie Raitt. Has been a long time, and a lot of people like he should be in the Hall of Fame, but he just doesn't have enough name recognition. His daughter Lily Hiatt is a singer, and she's bitter her dad's never won a Grammy, and he's it's okay, I've been nominated, I'm good with it. So I do think we get passionate about the people we love, but I do want you guys And we're going to include the links to the videos. I want to hear it. But I would like to hear y'all's pitch on why you think she belongs.
Okay, this is probably where I'm going to have to just maybe make, I don't want to read my list because it's really boring, but I'm not really good at facts. Colin's great at facts. I'm going to just read a couple things and maybe Colin can fill it in. Not only has she sold over 50 million records worldwide, she was the first female ever to have four top five singles from a debut album. She broke the Beatles record. P.S. I don't know that I can name all four Beatles, but maybe. But needless to say, she did something in the 80s that was not happening. She was leading women into basically a new generation of being equal to men. And we can bore you with stories about how Cindy fought to have her own music on that album, whereas the producers were trying to get her to do covers. So even when she didn't have a lot of control, she still took some control. She's one of the few to have gotten one Emmy, two Grammys, a Tony, and we're just waiting on her Oscar so she can have EGOT status.
So Bruce is missing the Emmy. Okay. He was nominated. Okay. He won an honorary Tony for his On Broadway. He's won an Oscar for Streets of Philadelphia. He's won multiple Grammys. And when he was nominated for an Emmy, we were like, oh, and he lost to Paul McCartney. You're against the Beatle and Beyonce. It was Beyonce. It was Beyonce's Lemonade, I think. Riding with karaoke, car karaoke with Paul McCartney. I'm like, okay, there's... If close. You don't lose, you're going to lose to a Beatle or Beyonce. That's a tough crowd. But yes, so he's an Emmy away.
Yeah, he's close too. So
yeah,
we'll wish for you guys.
Thank you.
She has already been inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. She has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Her first album is included in the Library of Congress's National Recording Registry. Time After Time has been covered by over 100 artists. Not all of them good, by the way. She was ranked number 22 on Rolling Stone's 100 Best Songs of the Past 25 Years. And her Girls Just Want to Have Fun video alone has over 1.3 billion views on YouTube. She's the first solo woman to win original score for lyrics and music for Kinky Boots. And some of these super divas have gone on record saying that they have been influenced by Cindy, including Pink, Lady Gaga, Katy Perry, Nicki Minaj, and many other newer female artists. She has broken down a lot of barriers, and she does not get the credit that she deserves. So what am I forgetting, Colin?
There's not a whole lot to add. I made a list as well, and thanks, you stole like everything on there. I would like to make reference like this: these YouTube numbers, these impressive numbers, and streaming as well, Spotify, like this is recent stuff. These are not views from the 80s. So she's still relevant in pop culture. And her shows sell out. She's still, when she goes on tour, she sells out the venues. The biggest thing I find is criteria they look for with the Rock Hall when you research it is like being an influence. And just to echo what Joe said, so many people, you just can't, it's such a huge part of it. But
it is when you, I remember a few years ago, Ken Burns did a country music documentary, and it was very clear that the Carter family and Jimmy Rogers were two trees that led to almost everything modern. It is hard to think of Lady Gaga, Pink, and others without seeing the fingerprints of Cindy. And just even casually going, and then much less when they say that.
Sure, that they've gone on record. Cindy would have to give credit to Blondie and the Go's and Wendy O. Williams. And so people have come before Cindy. And
And I think that's one of the things I love most about Bruce is, as we say down south, he didn't forget where he came from. And he knows whose steps he's built on, right? What Sam and Dave, and he talks about James Brown and all these other things. So that's, I think that's really cool. And I did not know all those facts. That's really impressive. And I also did not know the artist can't be involved whatsoever. The artist can't even send you a thank you card going, hey, hey, Colin, hey, Joe, thanks for all the help.
No. They're, once they make the ballot, they can rally their fans a bit. They, yeah. Like, they can't influence. Yeah, yeah, no, it's, there's rules against it.
Wow, that's weird.
Her career has done more than enough to make her worthy.
Yeah.
But she can't go on record saying, hey, I want to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I hope she wants to be in because we're working really hard. But
yeah.
I don't think she's ever said anything that would give anybody the impression she's not interested. I do remember she went on record saying that when she didn't get in last year, it was something like, and you might remember, Colin, it was something like, I don't need a badge of honor. Which I yeah. think was a nice way of saying life goes on. You don't always win the award. But right. I would put money on the fact that I think she would be very happy to get in.
I do. Yeah. I agree. I agree.
Yeah. And I do know someone had just said, I guess Cher in the past has said she doesn't want to be in. I thought Dolly was hilarious. Really? You're doing this? Yes, Dolly. We get over yourself. Yes, we want you to be on.
See, Dolly was classy about it. Cher was not.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
What
Cher said was, I wouldn't go into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame if they gave me $1 million. And yep. then she got nominated. So I think somebody will have to give her $1 million.
Okay, I'm gonna be bitter guy, mm-hmm. and you guys can remain mum because you are classy. It would piss me off to see a slot going to someone who has been that negative, though absolutely worthy. Just absolutely, you can talk about a great career and talk about an influence, and then for someone not to have that chance, it just seems, it would frustrate me. It does frustrate me, but we're going to move on because we're going to the high road here.
Okay.
All right. What should I have asked you that I haven't asked you? I feel like we've had a great conversation, but I feel like, is there anything?
Yes. Like,
okay, please.
That damn homework assignment.
Yeah, we will get to that.
Okay, that's
at the end. Yeah, that's, I always end that. What I do want to know is, after the concerts you've seen, is there anything, Colin, you haven't heard live that you're still chasing?
Oh, of course. As much as I love her shows, she doesn't dive into her deep cuts as okay. much as I would. I don't want to sound like a bitter fan.
No.
I completely get that if she doesn't do her, let's call it, core five biggest songs, people will be throwing tomatoes at her, right?
Like, yeah.
Even more than five, but there's a true five that are at every concert. But yes, there's tons of songs I've not heard live that I would love to. But I accept it. I don't know. It's just, I don't anticipate to hear them. I would love to.
What is the one that you would absolutely just go crazy over?
I'm going to go with the song that is not one of her originals. She covered it and she did it on one tour that I didn't get to go to because she only did it in Europe. It's a song called Midnight Radio. It's not a song that the casual fans. Now, anyway, long story short, she's done this song. Like, I'm just thinking of that list you were talking about where they count up how many times an artist has ever done the song.
Yeah.
Like, she's done the song in concert maybe 15 times in her 40-year career.
Wow.
And I have not been at one of those shows.
Okay. How about you, Joe?
I would say anything from one of her earlier bands, Blue Angel, was rockabilly.
Yeah.
I love that style, and I loved her voice in that kind of music. So I would say anything from Blue Angel, or I would love to have her do a cover of a really big hit that we've never heard her do.
Mm-hmm.
Something out of her catalog that we wouldn't expect. I've heard Cindy sing Cindy. I want to hear Cindy sing Journey.
Yeah.
Oh.
Funny story. At least I think it's funny. Bruce, when he was touring Australia, did a version of Staying Alive that's really good. Very kind of bluesy version. And Barry Gibb was just talked about it, and he was performing a little bit later, and he talked about how happy he was. And so he covered I'm on Fire. And my guest, who I was telling you about, that's a huge VG fan, was there that night. And he said, I got to tell you, Jesse, I was pretty bitter This is the only time I'd ever seen Barry Gibb and the Bee Gees, and he wasted a slot doing a cover of a Bruce song. And I said, I get that. So
I don't get that at all.
Yeah, Yeah, I think that would be fun too, to have that someone, it's older, but I had never seen it. Taylor Swift had Alison Krauss join us, and they did When You Say Nothing at All. And I was just like blown away. That was just great. Okay, talk about how we're getting ready for 2025. How can we help?
Oh, gosh. If you have a few hundred hours, I can help you.
Okay.
Fill that. But as far as like the average person who wants to help, I think that there's just a few things you can do. Basically, just keep spreading the word that Cindy is not in. People make assumptions that she is. So send people to inductcindylauper.com. For what it's worth, we have a petition for her to be nominated into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as well as Madame Tussauds, because some people think that's fun. It doesn't hurt to have those signatures on file if we ever need them. But more importantly, if you could just follow our accounts on social media, so whether that's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok, Annie, basically just follow us so you can see what we're posting, maybe a clip or a stat, and share that to just, we just need more people to be aware. Again, at the end of the year, it's down to 30 people. But if they know that the world, if not just the American population, is looking for Cindy to be included, I think it's just about bringing attention to the fact that she's wanted there. So just follow us and share everything on social media.
That sounds awesome. All right, I'm going to give you guys, go ahead.
And the videos that we talked about, the campaign videos that we've made,
yeah,
are also on that website. So if you just want to spend 12 minutes learning why she should be in, we have it organized.
Super. All right. All right. I'm going to give you a chance to final thoughts. But before I do that, I end every podcast with the Mary question. And if you are joining this podcast because you're big fans of Joe and Colin and their work, thank you. They have made you very proud. I told you it was going to go long, listeners. The Jay Armstrong is a retired honors English teacher. But when he was teaching, he would have his high school seniors in their honors English class. He would give them the lyrics to Bruce Springsteen's song, Thunder Road, and they would read it as if it was a poem. And he would discuss the imagery they Bruce used. He would talk about the themes they explored. They'd compare it to other poets like Robert Frost. And then at the end of the class, he would ask his students, does Mary get in the car at the end of the song? So I'm going to start with you, Colin.
God.
Does Mary get in the car?
Oh my, I struggle with this. I was not familiar with the song. Apparently it's a very iconic Bruce song, but it's before 84. So I just wasn't listening to music then.
Sure.
It's funny. I had different answers. I was analyzing the lyrics probably more than I needed to, but it's just like lines like, you ain't a beauty, but hey, you're all right. And don't turn me home again. It's like he's turned her, I don't know. I'm putting it in the terms of the 70s. I'm thinking she shouldn't be in the car. Shouldn't get in the car.
You're saying that she should not get in the car?
Not get in the car, because be a proud, independent woman. Some of the lyrics in the song doesn't seem like he respects her.
My wife says no, because he called her ugly.
You ain't a beauty, but hey, you're, all, you're right. All right. Yes. I wrote that one down specifically.
Okay. Very nice. All right.
You ain't a beauty.
Yes.
But then again, being that it was in the 70s and it was, I don't know, different time, maybe she did get in. Maybe she should. I don't know. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, I just wanted you to clarify that, because I heard your Canadian accent there a little bit. It sounds like you're giving her a caution not to get in the car. But if she had a choice, I think she would have gotten in the car. Here's why. She's not a beauty. And we can joke about that part. That part aside, I think what it sounds like is she's older. She's maybe in her 30s. She's not old, but she's getting there. And it sounds like she's gone through these guys and everybody in the town's a loser. And if she's still on the porch dancing, then she's a romantic. I feel like I feel like there's hope in getting in that car. I feel like for her, this is a chance for both of them to get out and do something different. I think she's going to do it. I don't know. What's the answer?
So I get about 50-50. Half my guests say she gets in the car. The other half say she doesn't. So you guys are very much on target. The only thing I always say, Colin, is, and I'll give some other examples. I always think that Mary usually puts herself down. Mary says, I'm not that me. I'm just not very pretty. Me, I'm just this old. And so I think our narrator is acknowledging that to get it out of the way. Like, I'm going to take your number one excuse on why no one would want you, and I'm going to meet that and take it away to convince you that we can do something together. That's in my mind. I've had everyone from, one of my favorites was a lady said that she read it as if he was threatening to kill her. And if she gets in the car, she's going to kill her. Others say that, no, he's saying, you're not much, I'm not much, but together maybe we can be something. So I'm a big romantic. I believe that in second chances and trying, but it always makes for a fun discussion. And that's why, whether you're a Bruce fan or not, I always end that, because similar people are like you, Colin. They have not spent a lot of time with the song. And then other people have heard it thousands of times, right? It is one of Bruce's most iconic songs. And
Bruce fans equally divided on this?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, a lot of them will say no, that at that time she wasn't worthy. He wasn't worthy, but later he tried again. I've heard people say she gets in the car and the first time he stops to get cigarettes, she goes, what the hell am I doing? And gets out. Then there's other people. There is this line, Racing in the Street, which is on his next album. He says, my Betty sits on her daddy's front porch. And they go, that's the same front porch that she danced on. And Mary is used. He uses Mary a lot. And then he has a song called Moonlight Motel, which is off his Western Stars album, which is very Jimmy Webb, Glenn Campbell-ish. It's very unlike Bruce. And the guy is at this old Moonlight Motel with the dried up swimming pool. And they talk about he pours a whiskey into the ground and he's mourning his wife. And the idea is, yes, they got in the car, drove, got to California. They spent their life together, and now he's mourning her. Yeah.
Can't we just ask Bruce?
I've thought about that. By the way, have both of you met Cindy? I meant to ask that earlier. Okay.
Yes.
Any Joe stories?
Joe has met her way more than I have. It's not my goal as much, but yeah. Yes, I have. We both met her. Go ahead, Joe.
Any stories to tell from that?
I think my favorite story is I saw her at the closing on Broadway for Kinky Boots. And I went up to her, and I have to say, as endearing as she is and as much as I'm in love with her, I have never smelled somebody smell so good.
Okay.
I don't know what it was, but I have never smelled anything so beautiful. And I said, oh my God, you smell amazing. And she goes, and she's just very funny. And she just says, could you imagine if I didn't? I thought, that is funny, because you can't be this famous and stink.
Yes.
My favorite memory of meeting her, I went pretty far for one of the tours, and when she found out how far I came, she just you could see it in her face. She was impressed and surprised. I went to Japan and I did one of her full tours, like all the dates, and she got wind of it somehow, and I got invited to meet her again. And anyway, it's just a special memory.
So. That's awesome. That's awesome.
So, I'm sure it's the same with Joe. Like, she knows, we both met her enough times. She knows our faces. She may not remember our names just like this, and I don't expect her to. Maybe Joe, because of the museum, actually. Yeah. She knows our faces, so it's neat.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Have you met Bruce?
I was hoping you'd ask. My audience is now, my regular listeners are rolling their eyes because I've told the story hundreds of times. Bruce did an autobiography. Funny story, right? He supposedly just reached out to a publishing company that had done like a children's book of based on one of his lyrics and said, I've written my autobiography. Do you guys want to publish it? And he toured, but he didn't do book signing. He did book appearances. He had pre-signed all the books. And so you paid for a ticket, which gave you a signed book, and you basically stood in line and you got 7 seconds talking to him and a picture. And so I drove down from Dallas to Austin. There's a long story. I had started a new job. I didn't have any vacation time. So I bought a ticket knowing that I could always give it to someone. I worked the Friday after Thanksgiving, and my boss, when he heard, said, gosh, that was a holiday. Do you need another day off instead? It just so happens, yes. So anyway, I drove down to Austin, stood in line, and the whole trip down there, I was, if you guys have ever seen The Godfather, where Luca Brasi's outside the wedding talking about what he's going to say to Don Corleone, that's all I did all the way down to Austin. What am I going to say? What am I going to say? Okay. When I got there, you step up, they give you, you give them your phone. I go, Bruce, I spent 9 months unemployed. I listened to Better Days and Land of Hope and Dreams every day to keep my hopes, to keep my spirits up. Thank you for that. And then by the time I got to maybe half of the sentence, they were going next. So I don't know if he heard what I had to say, but I needed to say it more than I needed him to hear it. And sure. Both of you guys are shaking your head. So that is that's the closest I've come to meeting him. It counts. I've got the picture of him. Would love for him to be on the podcast, obviously. Would love Cindy to be on the podcast for that matter. And I would ask him the Mary question, but I also would think just he can only give his thoughts. One of my favorite stories is a writer, Isaac Asimov, science fiction writer, was in a lecture and he was talking about what a story meant. And someone raised their hand and said, Dr. Asimov, that's not what the story's about. And he says, I wrote the story. Wouldn't you think I'd know what the story's about? And he says, what makes you think just because you wrote it, you know what it's about? And Isaac said, this was in his autobiography, he goes, I realized he was right. I knew what I wanted it to be, but isn't necessarily what the reader thinks it's about. So I would think same thing. Bruce may think in his mind she gets in the car or not, but the reality is it's just as Colin's theory is just as valid as yours or someone else's. Yeah. So cool.
Wow. Yeah. Many realities.
Yeah. Colin, any final thoughts before I let you go?
No, I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for having us. Just the purpose we're here is just to rally interest in getting Cindy into the Rock Hall and the social media world that we're in, like a retweet or a share, it means everything, right? You don't know whose eyes are going to see it. So we appreciate help. So
thank you. Joe, any final thoughts?
No, I've enjoyed hearing, hearing about your fandom. We respect all fandoms because we're all the same.
Right.
There's something that spoke to us about that particular artist. So as much as we love Cindy, I can tell that you love Bruce just as much. And there's just as many, if not more fans who love Bruce. There's something to it. So I will definitely do this experiment. We can exchange.
Oh, I'd love that. That'd be so much fun. All right. This has been a blast. I appreciate you both so much. This is so much fun. You're welcome anytime. And I'm going to keep a good thought ahead. And yes, let's do this experiment. I think that would be a blast. Listeners, go check out the website. Go sign up for their social media. Spend some time looking at the videos. And hey, do a deep dive into some of Cindy's material. I'm looking forward to learning more about some of her later material. But for now, be safe, be kind, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you for checking out this episode. If you enjoyed our discussion, I hope you will check out other episodes of the podcast. I've spent over 7 years talking to hundreds of music fans from around the world about the power and magic of music. Please follow me on all my socials. I'm still on Twitter, aka X, as
Jesse Jackson DFW. The show is at Set Lusting Bruce. The show and I are both on Facebook as well. I'm a part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetical order. I am part of a few other podcasts. On Perfectly Good Podcast, me and my co-host Sylvan are talking about every John Hyatt song in alphabetical order. Both Perfectly Good Podcast and Setlist and Bruce are part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, where there are dozens of great podcasts about music. Charles and I talk all things Doctor Who on Next Stop Everywhere. I'm joined each week by Lou and Karen on Last Best Hope for Conversation as we discuss Babylon 5 and other pop culture topics. This show can be reached at setlustingbruce@gmail.com. And I would mean the world to me if you could send me feedback on any of the podcasts. Or please reach out to schedule time for you to join me on a future episode. Getting to talk to people about their love of music and their favorite musicians and other creative endeavors is a passion of mine. And I hope that the conversations bring you a little joy, a little love, and a whole lot of light.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.